I think the ability to not be overwhelmed and as you said, going quiet when everything else goes big, there's a real lesson there, particularly for newcomers to industry, because it's bloody hard. And apart from there being noise, noise, noise all day, every day, it's a tough gig and it's a lot of rejection, particularly at the start. It's a lot of rejection after rejection after rejection, and able to be in a position where that isn't overwhelming is a really important trait to be able to possess.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes supplier news, developments, exclusive interviews, technology, and more to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast, visit joineliteagent.com. Now, here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome, everyone, to another special episode of the Elevate podcast, another episode of the Deluxe Nuts. Well, I think it's episode four of the Deluxe Nuts of five, so we're getting very close to the end of our season two recaps of Lux Listing Sydney. I'm joined once again by Wagga legend, auctioneer, salesperson, and now regrowth consultant Dave Scow. Good morning,
Dave. Hi, how are you?
Really good. Looking forward to the long weekend.
Really looking forward to the long weekend. A couple of long weekends in a row, which is a real treat.
Yeah, absolutely. And are you doing anything special other than watching Lux Listings, of course?
I'll be watching Lux Listings from the luxury of our little holiday house down on the south coast, down at Jervis Bay. So hopefully the weather's looking good, which it hasn't. All summer it's been wet, wet, wet. So we haven't had much of a go at it this year. But, yeah, it should be a good couple of days.
I'm hoping that has changed because it's been the same up here on the Gold Coast. And but it feels like, you know, it feels like a bit of spring creeping back in, a bit of summer creeping back in the air. So let's hope that Easter is a good period for everyone.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
No locusts or anything like that. We don't want anything else. anyway, so we are here to recap Lux Listing Sydney. But before we get into that, you caught up with Delene a couple of weeks ago, yeah?
Yeah, I did. I was really excited to get the opportunity to interview her one-on-one. I had never met her before and obviously was enamoured by her throughout the first and second season of Lux Listing. So it was a real treat to be able to speak to her.
Yeah, amazing. So any little tidbits that you managed to get out of Delene that we should look out for?
Yeah, I think that Delene has proven herself on the show to be an absolute masterclass, and that obviously comes with experience in terms of the way that she's able to build rapport and empathy with clients, the way that she's able to pick herself up and dust herself off after a rejection. So I touch on a couple of those real estate pieces. I also delve in and ask her if she could be the Queen of Survivor and knocking off the Duchess of Double Bay, and she gave a bit of an interesting response, so I'm keen to show you what she says.
Amazing. Well, shall we roll the tape?
Roll the tape. G'day, folks, and welcome to this special interview for the Deluxe Nuts podcast, brought to you by Elite Agent and sponsored by our good friends at Issue. I'm Dave Scow, and I'm excited to be joined by Lux Listings Australia superstar, Delene Lewis. Welcome, Delene.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
Good, thank you. So we've just launched into season two of the show. What was your reaction to how season one was received?
I was amazed. I mean, I didn't think that it would be, when Amazon first approached me, I was like, what's so interesting about what we do? I didn't think there would be an appetite for it. But A, they did an amazing job. But B, we've got amazing properties to work with. We've got Sydney, which is amazing. So you look at the harbour, you look at the foreshore, you look at the city. I mean, to actually have those tools to be able to work with is pretty extraordinary. And then to have the houses as well that we have to work with is added to that. You know, they've made an amazing show. And I was even astounded looking back at it, thinking, wow, that's actually really good.
You're actually pretty cool. Yeah.
Apparently they know what they're doing, you know.
I think that we've taken a view of it from an agent's point of view. So obviously there's the general public who are really interested in the amazing location and the homes and things like that. From an agent point of view, it's been a really interesting sneak peek, I suppose, inside the workings of these elite agents working in these elite areas of Sydney. For you, resilience seems to be a bit of a theme that's come across both seasons. I know that in season one, we had your vendor, Tom, who had the house that didn't sell, who decided to part company. In season two, we had the deal with the cliff house with Simon that fell over because the vendors couldn't find somewhere to go. You seem to handle those moments of rejection with a much more level head than some of the other castmates on the show. What do you put that down to?
Experience, you know, like we joke about it. Like, I've been doing this for nearly 30 years. So when Gavin was three and I think Simon was six, I started my real estate career. It makes a difference because it teaches you as well that it's not, you know, death by real estate. No one's going to die. Now you take a deep breath and you realize that there's going to be another way to pivot to solve the problem. Our job as a real estate agent is, and if it was easy, everybody would be doing it, right? So it is a difficult task. And if your vendors want to bump up their price or you lose a buyer, your job is not to sit and wallow in it. Is your job is to strategize a way to get your clients what they want and take yourself out of it and work out how to be and stay professional and work out how to get there to the end. And I think experience only teaches you that. I mean, I used to lose deals all the time. I make deals all the time. You're fielding hundreds of phone calls every single day. You lose a deal in one phone call and the next phone call will be making a deal, and you have to be able to bounce back really super quickly. Otherwise, you're not going to have a career. And I think that's what the exciting thing is about it as well. So no matter how you're feeling, you always have to have and be at that high level of professionalism and survivorship all the time. And that is resilience, as you've just said.
And it does seem like you need to be on all the time from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep. How do you maintain that energy throughout the day?
Well, I've got two young kids as well, and I've always said they're my absolute priority. So I'll wake up in the morning at 5:55 a.m. I'll do my meditation, which is the thing that has absolutely changed my life. And if I'm having a really difficult day, at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll pop in a meditation session there as well. And that is like a shot of coffee to your whole body. It seriously is. Like they say, 20 minutes of meditation is the equivalent to 3 to 4 hours of deep sleep. Now, you look at that cost versus benefit. Of course, you should be meditating. It's going to give you more sleep. So that really does help me as well. I think when you've got the level of experience that I've managed to be lucky enough to get over the years, you can pull from situations and say, okay, this is what I need to do. Sometimes if you're in a really difficult negotiation, instead of reacting, think about responding as well. Take a deep breath, go for a little walk, go through your brain. What are the tools available to me? What are the options available to me? Strategize rather than react, strategize. And I think any agent out there will greatly benefit from being less reactive and work out what they need to do to get themselves and the vendor there without putting themselves in the middle of that and blowing up a whole deal.
Yeah. Respond but not react is probably one of the most insightful things I've heard this week. So I'm going to steal that and use it for myself.
You can. You know, that's not mine, buddy. That's not mine.
Good. Speaking about your daughters, you're obviously an amazing mum to your two young ones, and you are an amazing daughter to your parents and a sister to your sister, that when we get a glimpse of them throughout the show as well. How do you strike that work-life balance that seems to be such a difficult task for a lot of people, particularly working mums? It seems to be something that is hard to master.
Yeah, I'm a single working mum as well, which kind of makes it even more challenging. But, you know, no one's an island. We don't do this by ourselves. It takes a village, and it really does. To have good help in the office as well as home is everything. I think over the years you actually get to be better at what you do because you learn how to balance. And it's still always a juggle. It's a journey, isn't it? We're all trying to get better at what we're doing. And there's some days that I was just like, that was just a bumpy day. Like, I can do better tomorrow. And you have to learn to give yourself some forgiveness. It's like listing appraisal. Sometimes you go in and it's like, I really stuffed that up. I really blew that up. And then you know what you need to do to pull from that to get better the next time. We're all a work in progress. Not every day I'm the best mom. Sometimes I'm impatient. I've had a terrible day. I've worked 12 hours and I'm tired. And then I know tomorrow I can do better and I will do better. And I think that is the journey of life as well, is that we all are striving to improve in one way or another. We're all a work in progress.
Beautiful. Completely agree. This season, we also got a glimpse into the Lang & Simmons corporate deal, where yourself and some of your fellow franchise owners, along with our friend Leanne Pilkington, have an opportunity to acquire the Lang & Simmons Corporation. Yes. How's that all going?
Phenomenal. It's been such a learning curve for me. For being a franchise owner, which I've been for 15 years, and a business owner, and then always complaining to head office about, I'm not getting this, I'm not getting that, I'm not getting value, blah, 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 my franchise fees are too high. Now we're flipping on the other side. Yeah. But the reason we bought it is because we wanted a seat at the table. We wanted to control that dialogue. And when your franchise owners start complaining about something, rather than do nothing, do everything. Right? Do everything. And that's the real exciting thing about it. We don't want to be like some of the other guys. We definitely do not want to be like that. We want to change the conversation. That's why I agreed to do the show, because I want to change the conversation. So there is a better way to do this. We don't have to be the shiny things that people don't like about real estate agents for the most part. We can do things a different way. We can do things a better way. I mean, Leanne Pilkington is a trailblazer in what she's doing for women and for the industry. And I think if we can have a conversation about how do we make ourselves better, it is a better conversation for us, for our peers, and also for the industry. The consumer wins at the end of the day. That should be the conversation.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that probably puts Lang & Simmons at a pretty unique position in that the people that the decisions affect directly are the ones that have got a seat at that table. And that's something that a lot of franchise operations can't claim to have.
Exactly. And, you know, instead of saying, oh, you know, we're a family-owned business and have 1,000 offices, we're saying we are the family that makes the business, and sure, all of our business owners make up our family. And that's the ethos with Lang & Simmons. That's what I love. It's been my real estate family since I joined. I left there for a couple of years and I came back because I love the culture. It is a family culture where all of us from all over Sydney are a family, and we're not judged by where we live or how much we earn. It is like we're all in it together and we're trying to make it work. And it is really a beautiful culture. And yeah, I'm not just saying that but it's actually, that's why I bought into it, because I believe so strongly in it.
Yeah, amazing. We've also just had to confirm that Lux Listings has been renewed for an exciting third season. You're probably not aware of this, but Sam McLean and I often refer to you as Queendoline in our podcast. Oh,
thanks. It rhymes too.
It does rhyme. Please, please tell us that Queendoline is back on board with season 3.
We've already shot it. We're done. So now that you've shot it, thank you, Lord, the shooting is over. They asked me the other day, was the best part of season 2? And I was like, when it ended?
The
shooting stopped? Because it is, it's really full on. It's sure. really full on. But I don't know when they're going to drop it. You know, this is up to the Amazon gods. They work in their own stratosphere. So we are just their humble servants. We do what they tell us to do.
Anything that we can expect to see in season 3?
Look, they always love a bit of drama, don't they? I shy away from that drama. I hate that stuff. But I think you'll see some pretty epic houses. Because they're also going out of the East as well with stuff that Monica's doing as well, you'll see some pretty epic houses. She loves a cheese room. So, you know, like you'll see some pretty eccentric houses.
Amazing. When you just touched on the point that you don't like the drama, then from industry, I think that you've done a really great portrayal to the general public at what real estate agents actually are. We get a really dud rap, and I think that there are many members of the public that think that we're really just in it for the money or just in it for the fast cars and designer brands. And so on behalf of the industry, thank you, because I think that you've shown the general public that we're not all that, and that that client first mentality is absolutely the cornerstone of any really successful agent.
Well, exactly. And successful agent being the key, because I interview a lot of guys and they want to be in for the glory, the shiny shoes, the make one sale and they post all over Instagram. It's like, if you're in it for that reason, you will not succeed. You might succeed for a minute, but your longevity will never be there. This is a marathon. You need stamina, you need discipline, and you need to have morals. And if you don't have those things, you will not survive. You will get eaten up. And it is a dog-eat-dog business out there, and so it should be, because you're not only the toughest survive, but the people that have the most holistic view on what success really looks like, they will survive and they will thrive. And I think that's the difference that we are bringing to the table about real estate, is that it is a different conversation. And you as an agent out there, if you're the first part of the conversation, you're not going to survive long-term in this industry. If you want to be the second part of the conversation, there's always room for change. There's always room for growth. And you will benefit that, not only in your career, but in your life. And that should really be the key.
Yeah, sage advice there. That's fantastic. One last question for you. Now that you've had a bit of a taste of reality television, I'm a huge Survivor fan. can we expect to see you on any other reality formats? I think that you would be fantastic at Survivor. We've had a couple of agents there already. Obviously, we've had Cara, the Duchess of Double Bay. Perhaps it's time for Queensland to take the throne.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm really happy in my lane and I'm really happy, you know, my kids take the priority and I don't want to be a TV star. I'm happy doing this because it's fallen in my lap, but I'm not out there gunning for anything else. But who knows what's around the corner? You know, maybe they'll get me on Bold and the Beautiful.
Maybe. We've seen a couple of Bold and the Beautiful pensive looks from the boys this season.
I know. Simon can be bold and Gavin can be beautiful, or they'll probably fight over which one's which, who knows.
Well done. Very good. Celine Lewis, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Bye.
Take care.
All right. Amazing interview with Delene, Dave.
Yeah, as you say, she's just such a genuine, humble, warm person. She was such a joy to speak to, and that's how she portrays herself on the show too. So it was nice to see that what we see on the screen is actually how she represents herself in real life.
Yeah, well, I actually met her for the first time at the premiere a couple of weeks ago, and she was dressed in this divine orange number and definitely queen worthy. And she was one of my favorite people in the first season, and in this episode has actually one of my favorite quotes that I've ever heard in the whole real estate industry. So and really, really good for life. So we're about to get on with our recap of episode 5 of season 2 of Lux Listings. But before we do, a quick shout out to Issue.com, we couldn't make this series as fun and engaging and as enticing as we have. They're big supporters of the Deluxe Nuts. And as a special offer, readers and listeners of Elite Agent Elevate can get started with Issue today for free. Or if you sign up for an annual premium account to get 50% off when you go to issue.com and use the promo code ELITE. That's ISSUU.com. And use the promo code ELITE at the checkout for your free account or 50% off your premium annual account. So once again, that's issue.com with the promo code ELITE. All right, Dave, let's get on with our recap of episode 5.
Beauty, let's get stuck in. And episode 5 opens with the rolling panorama of Sydney, and it's really a play the game of spot the Sydney landmark with beautiful vistas of the bridge and the Opera House, and we're obviously back in the east. The real stomping ground of the Lux Listings show, I suppose. And we come to another episode of Carpool Karaoke with Simon and Tammy pacing the streets of the eastern suburbs. And a really interesting thing, and I think that a lot of agents could resonate with this, with Simon and Tammy's banter on this car ride of pointing out the properties that they're driving past and what they know about them. From a buyer's agent's perspective, they're very picky and they're saying, yuck, yuck, filthy, horrible, grotesque. I can't believe they're doing that. I can't believe you can see right into the front yard of this new place, blah, blah, blah. But it reminded me of the umpteen dozen times where I've got a friend or a family member in the car and we're driving around Wagga, particularly if someone's not from Wagga, perhaps I've got people visiting. And it really is, I've sold that one. I sold that one last year. That bloke bought a house off me and he's renovating it now. So it just goes to show, I suppose, that the insanely detailed market knowledge that these guys have when they're at the top of the game, because they may not have dealt with these transactions, but they know innately what something is traded for, when it traded, what the plans are, who bought it. I think it's a really good point to making sure you've got that local knowledge to be at the top of your game.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point for any sort of people that have just come in the industry. You know, like a really great tip in getting hyperlocal actually means knowing who did what, like, you know, like in the greatest of detail. And you know what I always say to people, if you're not number one, be a reporter. So, you know, like report on everything, have such great intimate knowledge that you can actually, you know, you could do the report just like CoreLogic, but better.
Yeah, correct. And look, all the best agents that I know will spend half an hour or 45 minutes at the end of each day looking at what has come on the market in that area and what has been reported as sold, whether it's through realestate.com or domain.com or through the CoreLogic data. And they just have this really incredible ability to retain that information and be able to draw on it in their brain as they need to.
Yeah, absolutely. So we get to our destination, which is something called the Amalfi Coast House, 5 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms, and an estimated eye-watering price of $18 million.
Big money, but what a view, hey? And it is in that little pocket of Bellevue Hill that is a little bit out of the way and well hidden. The views are insane. The views from the city skyline all the way through to the Opera House and the bridge, over to the Heads, and then even looking out at the Point Piper Peninsula. It must be a really exclusive enclave. I obviously have never been there, but I can understand where it is on the map. I imagine that those properties in there are pretty tightly held.
That's it. If you can see the White House from the balcony, then you're obviously doing pretty well, right?
You're in good company.
Simon's client in this case is the head of the GWS Giants, Adrian Finesca. And, I looked up Adrian and he definitely is a someone. So he was a banking and finance lawyer with Mac Bank and director and chair of audit and risk committees and all sorts of stuff like that. And he's brought the family along with him. And Simon mentioned him in the interview that that we ran last week, that he's done a lot of business with Adrian. And we talked about client loyalty a lot. We get to a game of Sydney Landmark I Spy, as I like to call it. And Tammy finally points out, when you live in Sydney, I guess, and I lived in Sydney for a long time, every time you look at a property to live, whether it was to rent or to buy or whatever, you'd be craning your head for a view of the Harbour Bridge to go, well, am I going to see the fireworks from here?
Yeah.
And finally, Tammy hits on that major Sydney selling point of, can you imagine the New Year's fireworks? And I'm like, yes, I can. And yes, that would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been the question that's gone through my head all throughout season one and now almost all the way through to season two, just how incredible the vantage point would be for the New Year's fireworks over Sydney Harbour. And look, this place would be second to none, really. It's got gun barrel views right down to the Harbour Bridge and the Opera House. It's a spectacular location.
That's it. I'd be organising the party even before the ink was dry.
Yeah, correct.
My mate saying, he's at my place. But anyway, so the kids aren't thinking about New Year's Eve. They're just looking around going, we love this house. And then Adrian drops the bombshell, which is he's only got $14 or $15 million to spend on something that is $18 million. And then, like he says, well, we've worked together for a long time and there's plenty of sass between Tammy and Adrian on, Simon's history and backstory. But, he wants to cash in on all of his loyalty with Simon. I don't know, I thought love didn't cost a thing, being a fan of J-Lo, but clearly it does. So tell me about how this might play out in the real world.
I think realistically, no amount of love or relationship is going to equate automatically to such a hefty discount. We're talking sort of 20 to 25% discount off the asking price. Whether I suppose there's a little bit of puffery for the point of the show, whether the 18 to 20 was a realistic figure for a start. I think realistically, from a real estate selling agent's point of view, if you're marketing something for $1 million, which is probably a bit more palatable in most areas than 18 to 20, definitely in Wagga. If we were marketing something for $1 million and we knew that we had a buyer that only had 800 to spend, we probably wouldn't be wasting our time showing them through. It's not good for us. It's not good for the vendor. It's probably not good for the buyer either. So I think that there's probably a little bit of behind the scenes stuff that we haven't seen happen here. Whether that is that the buyer's got more money than they're letting on in this episode, or whether that asking price of 18 to 20 is perhaps a little inflated and it realistically is more in line with what the buyer's got to spend. And look, that sort of comes to a head before the season's out, so we'll discuss that in the next recap. But I think realistically, showing someone where there's such a disparity in what they can afford and what something's asking is never going to happen in real life.
Yeah, it is. It's a really tough ask, I reckon. But good advertising for Simon, because if he can do the deal, well, I guess he's going to be on everyone's speed dial.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the point here is that relationship building. And Simon goes in to talk about this client being a client of Simon's way back when he was a real estate selling agent, now through to the buyer's agency. And as he discussed in your piece with him last week, he's now done a couple of other deals with this particular buyer since this episode was shot way back last year. So That relationship building has equated to multiple deals for Simon, obviously lots of money in terms of revenue generated. So that's probably the point here, is maintaining those long-term relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so now we're sort of moved from Bellevue Hill to the Lambo, and in the Lambo is not Rembo this time, but Shanee. So Gavin and Shanee are looking like they're, better friends than Gavin and Simon at this point.
Yep.
Gavin talks about the meditation session that he's got planned with Delene, and looks like he'd rather go to the dentist for like 4 simultaneous root canals. So I've got to say, if he's had any acting sort of, any acting mentoring or anything like that, they'd be very proud of him right now, because that looked real.
Yeah, it did look real.
They talk about Gavin's meeting with Martine and the Sylvania Waters property, and Gavin says Martine's not interested in that area. Well, duh, she just wanted it to be, like Miami, and got out of there as quick as she could.
Yep.
So then Gavin gets on and says, you need to take the client's expectations and knock them out of the effing park, which is true. You do need to do that, but clearly he's not feeling incredibly zen at the moment, because as we saw in the last episode, he was called back to the doctor's surgery to have something checked out. So,
yeah, and it's probably where we see Shanee come to the fore, I suppose. We've seen Shanee and Gav's relationship throughout season one being that of friends first and then employer-employee second. And it looks like Shanee's got a fair insight into Gav's personal life or his background, I suppose, and she can really tell that something's a little bit off, and she sort of pushes and pushes just as far as she knows that she can push to try and get out of him what the problem is, and that he's not acting himself and he's a little bit distracted. And, he tells us that the doctor's visit came back with the shock announcement that the lump on his head was a skin cancer, a basal cell carcinoma. Which he explains is pretty common. It's probably the most common kind of skin cancer that people can get. He's quite sure that the prognosis is going to be okay long term, but it does mean that he has really, well, first of all, he's got an operation that he's got to have, and B, maybe makes him take stock of priorities in life, I suppose, a little bit more. And he did touch on that at the end of the last episode in that cliffhanger when he got the call from the doctor's office. I can imagine that is probably something that would stop you in your tracks a little bit and think, shit, is the balance that I've got at the moment right, or does that need to be worked on?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that was the scene that, when that came up, I actually went, holy crap, and texted Gav and said, are you okay? And then, he said, why? And I said, because I've just been watching the show. And I think, he must have thought that I thought the show was terrible. He was like, yeah, you mean? And I'm like, no, your head's silly. Is your head okay? And, this is not a spoiler. I mean, obviously there is spoilers here, but this doesn't get dealt with again. So we want to let you know that Gavin is fine. He did have an operation. He sent me a pic of his head. He was sort of wrapped, from here up in a bandage. He said he had 15 stitches in the noggin. It luckily wasn't a melanoma, but I guess if it can happen to someone like Gavin, it can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
He said he had a general that morning and was at an open that night. So
unreal.
Beast mode.
Absolute beast mode. And so taking stock of priorities and balance probably was thrown out the window straight after the operation, because straight back into it.
But Gavin, if you're listening, we are very glad you're okay, and we're very glad that Romy pushed you into it. And if anyone even remotely thinking that sort of thing, go get yourself checked out. All right.
Yeah, correct.
Where do we get? We get into TRG now, and everyone's got green juices and are back on their health kicks. And Kai has taken a big role in this series, I've noticed. Everyone sort of talks about him having a blinder, and he wants to raise the topic about Monica and the Grand Sky penthouse again. Mm-hmm. So we get a flashback to the co-listing party where everyone's sort of swanning around drinking champagne. And now that Gavin's had a bit of a health scare, he sort of wants to do it again, maybe not for the right reasons. Maybe he likes saying that, he doesn't want the others in there. So
yeah, correct. And that's what he goes straight to is, and we saw him earlier in this season very bluntly object to wanting to have anything to do with Monica. And I know that you raised the question with him in your interview with him, and that he just didn't, not that he didn't think much of her, but he just didn't think that he needed much out of her, I suppose, that he does things his way, she does things her way. They're both very successful in their own right, but they probably don't align much otherwise. But I think the point here was when Kai really emphasised that, well, at this co-listing party, it was between us, Pally is there, Delene's there, and Monica desperately wants to work with someone from the East to bring Eastern Suburbs buyers into this opportunity. And if it's not going to be us, then it's going to be someone else. And that's where Gav's ears pricked up and thought, well, no, I'd rather it was us than someone else.
But is that really a good idea to do something? Like, you know, like I often, you know, like, and I'm guilty of it too. Like, I've jumped into things just because I don't want to be the first, not necessarily because I really want to or because it's good for my business. That's such a hard one though, isn't it?
Yeah. And look, I think all residential sales agents would have had points in their career where they were faced with perhaps an opportunity where they didn't take the opportunity on because they wanted it, first and foremost, but because they didn't want someone else to have it. And whether that's a listing at a fee that someone's offered at a much lesser rate than what you would normally work for, and you agree to match that fee because you'd rather have it at the lower fee than the other agent have it at the lower fee, it's probably not the right motivation. But at the same time, I mean, if you're edging out the competition in that way, particularly if you're a newer agent perhaps and opportunities are more scarce on the ground, Gav, I wouldn't have thought, would have any trouble in that regard. And I also don't think that he's looking at it from the point of view that he's going to get personally involved, but he's quite happy for the TRG brand to be represented at this co-listing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the same meeting, like, you know, and this sort of had shades of season one when he announced that competition where, you know, I think we made that joke about them going for the J&B Hi-Fi vouchers.
Yes.
But, you know, talks about having like a two-year party and, you know, that going to a nice place and all the rest of it. And, you know, so that's something for us to look forward to. But, you know, the line in this that really confused me, well, didn't confuse me, it was quite kind of funny. Gavin says, leave your mobile phones at home, and then says, just kidding, like, you know.
And in that 3 or 4 seconds between making the announcement and saying just kidding, it looked like half of them were going to stroke out. Like, it was like you'd ask them for their first phone. And it is like that. Asking an agent not to bring their phone to a function would be like asking them to have a limb lopped.
It reminds me a little bit of, I don't know if you know, I used to work for Optus, or Mark and I both used to work for Optus. And every function where the CEO at the time, Paul O'Sullivan, would speak, he'd get up and then he'd say, will you all please switch your mobile phones off? And then he'd say, actually, no, those of you on the Optus network, turn them back on again. Like, you know, obviously thinking about the revenue, but yeah, like, asking someone to give up their phone, anyway, yeah. Moving along. So we're back to Double Bay and Delene and Jacob, and we're at a cute little cottage in Double Bay.
Yeah, and it is cute. I really like this little house, actually. I mean, it's not the some of the property porn that we've seen in terms of clifftop or waterfront or views or anything like that, but it is as neat as a pin, and it's just a really nice, humble-looking, and I mean humble, it's worth $6 million, but it's it's a lovely little place. Simon walks in though and says, "Righto, show me around this shithole." So he's tactful as ever.
Yeah, well, I, you know me, like I look at these properties and then I think, oh, where is that? And then, you know, like I sort of, you know, I do all of it, Googling and everything. But this one, I felt like I knew that because for a while I lived in Double Bay in Court Road, and there's lots of little cottages like that out there, and they're sort of, you know, they've really got cute exteriors and stuff like that. And I looked at this one and it's not in Court Road, but it's the street behind Court Road. Yep. And I thought, well, that, you know, that makes sense. You know, but I think Simon is, you know, funny when he says on a scale of teeny tiny, the cottage is Gavin.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's bigger than the White's lift, but not that much bigger.
Yeah, that's right. It's a pretty modest kind of place. And at the same time, you had a really good pickup. It sort of pans across the Lang & Simmons for sale board out the front. Delene showing Simon through and pointing out the features in terms of it being a really nice home And Simon makes a few quips about whether his staff can fit in there or not, blah, blah, blah. But the sign actually points, and Delane does mention that there's DA-approved plans in place if someone didn't want the house as it was, to be able to knock it over and build something else. And it looks like the signboard really emphasises the fact that it's probably a development potential site as opposed to it being a nice cutesy little cottage for someone to move into.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I don't think we see this place again, but it was sold. They wanted, Delene wanted 5.8 for it and it was sold for 6.4. So, yeah. As usual, Simon's smoking the funny stuff.
Yeah, that's right. So interestingly, though, it had only sold the year before for 4.1. So when Simon went in there and said, look, I know that this place was sold last year, what, the market's gone up maybe 15%. And Delene says 15, more like 50%. And that's where we've sort of come to that six-ish figure. And look, the proof was in the pudding with that sale at 6.4 because it was sold for 4.1 maybe just over 12 months prior. And that really just goes to show the bullishness of that Sydney market during this filming period, all the way up until very recently, I suppose, where it wasn't unusual to see things sort of rise by 50%. And we're talking about 50% of $4 million, which is a lot of money.
A lot of money, yeah. Well, that is, I think that really does bear testament to how crazy Sydney was last year. Like,
yeah,
right there is proof. But Delene and Simon kind of, you know, put down the weapons and say, see you at the meditation. Simon knows that Gavin has cheated on his bromance and taken Martine into Sylvania waters. Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's interesting too because, you know, like, everybody knows everything in this industry, right?
Correct. Yeah, everything and everyone. And look, Simon probably has a very typical agent response to that by saying, bloody Martine, who is she, blah, 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 she's nothing compared to me, and just has a little dig, quite polite, nothing brutal. But Delene is very quick to realise the cameras are still rolling and the industry is very small and she probably knows Martine throughout her connections or networks and is very quick to remind Simon that it's necessary to play nice and be polite.
Yep, that's it. You've got to keep it tidy.
Yeah, correct.
Got to go back over 3 bridges and 10 tolls to get back to Sylvania waters now.
Yep,
and we see Gavin walking up the driveway and I was thinking, what, no Lambo, no Uber? But then I thought, well, lesson from John McGrath, always park down the end of the street.
Correct. Don't take up the good parking spots in front of the house. They're for the buyers.
Yep. And so we hear that Why Can't This Be Miami song again.
Yeah, I thought we buried that last episode. It's back.
Well, no. Do you know what? I saw on Facebook Lux Listings, if you look it up, they've actually made a Spotify playlist of all the...
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so we'll leave a link to that in the show notes just in case anyone's missed it. But, yeah, they've actually... apparently a lot of people have been asking them about their music.
I've got a 4-hour drive down to the coast for my Easter break, so I know I'm set now.
I don't know if you can take that much, you know, that much rap, but anyway. Sylvania Waters, Cooley's Tires back in action.
Yeah.
And I think it should get a credit of its own, frankly.
Yeah.
But interesting conversation. So Gavin and Damien are talking and Gavin says he only wants 6. Gavin wants more, and he says he gets a bonus commission at 6.5. So let's talk about that as a listing strategy.
Yeah, look, it's not uncommon. It probably doesn't happen every listing, but it's not uncommon for agents to try and put themselves in a position of striving for that absolute dream price, I suppose. A lot of sellers are quite into it because they can see then that there's an extra carrot, I suppose, for an agent to be really dedicated to achieving best possible price. And I think that that's a given in most agency situations anyway, that the agent's job is to achieve best possible price. But if we're talking about a price which is that big, hairy, audacious dream price, then, yeah, absolutely most vendors are happy to remunerate a substantial chunk. So, I mean, quite often you could see that the standard fee on something like that might be 1.8% on the sale, on the wholesale itself, and then there might have been a nice little 10 or 15% kicker for anything over and above that $6.5 million. So, look, I mean, even if you extend by $100,000 over and get 6.6, that's a nice little extra 15 grand on top of the 1.8% of up to 650 as well, six and a half as well. So, yeah, look, it's not uncommon. It's a nice way to be able to show your vendor that you've got extra incentive to achieve absolute best price. And, yeah, look, unfortunately, we'll talk about the auction in a minute, Gav misses it by that much. But, I mean, look, there's still the fee on the 6.456, maybe, I think.
I think 6.456, I think $44,000 short of the bonus. But this auction is interesting because remember last week we had a good giggle over the quotes from the first season where Gavin says, you know, I work the auction floor like a stripper at a Bucks party.
Yep.
And even last week he was saying, you know, when it's auction day, I'll shake my little hiney for dollar bills.
That's right.
He literally, he works harder. Like, he literally does go from buyer to buyer. And I thought it was, clearly, he's not only got Damien Cooley reading the room and, Damien's just an expert at reading everything, tea leaves, I reckon Damien could read. He actually sort of knows which move to make with which buyer to sort of, get things going again. And not that this would happen in every auction, because I think, maybe would they do it in Wagga? I don't know. We'll get to that in a second. But he does, the way that Gavin does play people off against one another is pretty interesting study in humanology, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to see Gavin's read on who needs to be spoken to and who maybe doesn't. And I think that there's always a situation where some buyers need that nurturing through the actual auction process where some others don't. And you'll see that there's a couple of buyers there or bidders in this situation that Gav doesn't approach in terms of what we can see anyway, but doesn't approach to try and coach them through another bid or anything and really focuses his attention on the one that he thinks needs the focus. It's interesting to see. I think that in most auctions, the team sort of gets a bit more involved, and it's not always up to just the listing agent. Quite often times you may have other agents within your office that have also introduced buyers to this property throughout the campaign, so they're working their buyers. So you may see that there's a couple of conversations going on concurrently with different agents from the office. It was interesting to see Shanee, and perhaps it was Evan, I think, that was at this auction, and they really just stand at the front like they're on show. That I don't see that happen at auction all the time. Usually you've got them within the crowd or mingling within the crowd or giving that commentary or coaching as needed. In terms of would it happen in Wagga, I think a lot of regional agents would agree that regionally, outside of sort of Sydney, Wollongong, Newcastle particularly, there's not a lot of contract auctioneers. So a lot of the auctioneering gets done by the agency principal, who is often the listing agent. So we're void of that opportunity to talk to the buyers as we're going because we're at the front calling the bids. The metro markets have a really good opportunity to work the buyers because they contract that auctioneering out. And I think that if regional agents have the opportunity to contract that auction out, they really should do that.
Having the auctioneer being the same person as the salesperson, being the same, the same as the agency principal, it's a very, very different world. And, the other thing that I wanted to point out here is it's obvious too that, if you are going to bring in an auctioneer from outside, that you have to have done the work. Like, the auctioneer doesn't have to do all the work. And there has to be like a great relationship between the agent and the auctioneer, like almost like a, and there is kind of, you can see a symbiosis between Cooley and Gavin because they've worked together so often, so they kind of could almost finish each other's sentences.
Yep.
And, I think there's probably, if you are in a city market, there's no substitute for having that. Hope is not a strategy on auction day.
Yeah, 100% right. And I think Damo would have that with the bulk of the clients that he calls for, particularly in those in-rooms auctions that he does a couple of nights a week. The agents are so comfortable with knowing that he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows, and I know that Gavin mentioned it in your interview with him last week, he knows just when to put the right amount of pressure on, and he knows when it's called for trying to extract an extra couple of thousand versus an extra couple of tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands in the bid. He is best in class. I mean, Damien Cooley, they arguably is no better auctioneer in the country. And that comes with years and years of experience and dedication to his craft. So all power to him. But I think it's a really powerful point as a selling agent to be able to have that complete trust in the auctioneer so that they can do their thing and you're not having to worry about any of that stuff while you can work your buyers.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so 6.456 is the final sale price. So it's more than what they thought they were going to get. But unfortunately, as we mentioned before, $44,000 short of the bonus. But I thought what was really good here is that, you know, like while Gavin was sort of out on the floor working his, you know, working his magic, that he went straight to the underbidder and said, look, we'll help you find something.
Yeah, correct. And it was straight to the underbidder. It looked, and I mean, again, we're at the powers of editing and not being there on the day, but it looked like he might have almost done that even sooner than what he did to go and congratulate the actual buyer. So, yeah, really good play from Gavin there.
Yeah. So let's get out of Sylvania Water, shall we?
Yeah. Take us back to the east.
Let's get our zen on. I don't know where this meditation room is, but this is one of my favourite scenes with Delene where she's sort of walking around lighting candles and, you know, basically looks like a model for an activewear brand. And she talks about how important, again, meditation is. And this was my favourite thing. She said the word unoverwhelmability, and it took me a while to actually write down what that was. And she said, when everything goes big, you go quiet, you know. Yeah. So, and I think that's such a great lesson for young agents too, because in real estate there can be so much noise. But, you know, like when everything goes big, you go quiet, take a moment, take a deep breath, engage in the good. And she's lighting candles. And I sat there and scratched my head for a moment and thought, well, that's, you know, we were talking about quotes last week. Thought that's one quote that I haven't heard, but I picked up my pen and wrote that one down. When everything goes big, you go quiet. Because it's just, you know, it reminds me very much of, God, what just came to mind was Nicole Kidman when she broke up with Tom Cruise. Do you remember the furore over that?
Yeah.
When everything goes big, you go quiet. So she handled herself in such an amazing way. And I think that's just, Delene handles herself in such an amazing way.
Yeah. And as we saw in the chat that I had with her, she really credits meditation to a lot of her success, or the ability, not to her success, but the ability to be successful. And I've been quite intrigued by that since I've spoken to her and since she mentioned it earlier in the season as well. And that unoverwhelmability explanation of what meditation is has really stuck with me, and it's something that I've looked into and have started practicing myself as a result of Delene. So thank you, Queen Delene, if you're watching. I think the ability to not be overwhelmed and, as you said, going quiet when everything else goes big, there's a real lesson there, particularly for newcomers to industry, because it's bloody hard. And apart from there being noise, noise, noise all day, every day, it's a tough gig, and it's a lot of rejection, particularly at the start. It's a lot of rejection after rejection after rejection, and able to be in a position where that isn't overwhelming is a really important trait to be able to possess.
Yeah. I think too in real estate, and I talked a lot about this with Cara Acheson, you know, who was in Survivor, the empath from Survivor, because in real estate you can take on, I think, everyone's emotions, because generally people are buying or selling or moving and it's an emotional time in some way. Yeah. And I think you don't have to be an empath to take on, you know, like a lot of what's going on around you. And, you know, and I think the other thing too is, you know, someone with Delene's experience obviously has learned over a period of years not to react to situations emotionally.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that okay, let me go quiet for a second, think about my next move, perhaps even sleep on it, meditate on it. Like I completely get it.
Yeah, and I think a real class showing of that, when we talked about it in the season one recap, was when that vendor sacked her while she was at a dad's party, and she handled that with such dignity and grace. And it really was a shitty phone call that she took out on the balcony away from everyone else, but she immediately just regrouped within herself and got back on with things, went back, and her family wouldn't have known any otherwise, I'm sure, because she was able to just compartmentalize that, put it away until she needed to work out what the next step was.
Yeah, yeah. Now it's time for the Keystone Cops to enter the building. So Simon enters in activewear and says, I don't have to stand on my head, do I? Like, you know, I don't want to ruin my hair. Yeah. And then Gavin walks in his workout suit and says, right, are we ready to effing meditate again?
Yeah, absolute suited, like suited from head to toe. Like, and he does say, look, I've got an appointment straight after this, so I couldn't wear activewear or I don't have time to get changed afterwards. But I think it also probably shows that he's not that enthusiastic about it. He's probably a little bit skeptical about this mumbo jumbo meditation anyway. So even getting him there is probably a bit of a win, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is interesting. I actually thought it might have been an activewear suit. Like I actually, you know, because this is the eastern suburbs we're talking about.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, you know, like it for someone to have come up with the idea of having, you know, like a business suit, like hear me out, with a bit of lycra in it, a bit of extra stretch, yeah, so that you can go from desk to, you know, yoga to, you know, to your spin class to your dinner. I mean, it's not out of the realms of possibility.
Maybe you want to trademark that, you want to get a patent. Yep, there's money there.
Just saying, with a phone pocket, obviously, because you don't want to lose your phone. But speaking of phones, this reminded me of the Queen's Gambit. Jolene says, all right, you two, shut up. I'm going to ring the bell and you've got to be quiet till the bell goes again. Yeah. And this just reminded me of those scenes in, you know, early Sunday school where, you know, they say, all right, it's time for the Lord's Prayer. And, you know, you got to shut your eyes. And then as a kid, you're kind of like looking to see who else's eyes are open, you know. And so the two naughty kids in the room, Gavin and Simon, look, you know, and then Simon's phone goes off and it's game over.
Yeah, correct. And Delene's mortified. She opens one eye and says, what the fuck's going on here? The phone's ringing. They're not into it at all. Simon starts telling us then of this new buyer that he's got who wants acreage in Sydney. He jokes, does anyone have anything that could home a couple of lambs and calves or llamas, he might have said, I think. And then, look, it's just all on for young and old there. Then the barrage starts of Simon and Gav, and then Simon gets another email or a text message while he's there, and it's a buyer that he's been dealing with on one of Delene's listings who he finds out has contacted Delene directly to change an appointment time. He chips Delene and says, what are you doing talking to the buyers directly? She says, well, your buyer contacted me. I can't just not respond. I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't tried to cut you out or anything. It's just I've been courteous and gotten back to him. And the whole meditation thing's just up the shit, really.
Situation sort of half normal for those two, I'm sure. Like, you know, like, but it reminded me too of the scene last year where someone went on that date with Miss Universe and, you know, and the phone rang and he ended up sort of doing deals the whole time he was at dinner. So, you know, the life of, you know, I think the lesson out of that is look after your partner.
Yeah.
Take time out of real estate. It doesn't have to be all the time. And then, you know, like obviously this is the end of the episode because then the camera kind of pans back and you see on the door to the studio, contentment is the greatest wealth. And I just thought, either the camera crew or the producers have got a sense of humour because it sort of looked like, you know, okay, let's get back to, you know, like a bit of zen in this. But, you know, that's where the episode ended.
Yeah. That's it. And so no cliffhanger this episode. I think it's probably the first one that we haven't seen any real cliffhanger.
Yeah, I know. I was sort of expecting, you know, I don't know what I was expecting. I guess because there were so many cliffhangers like leading up to the end of last season. But there's a few things that are kind of, you know, unresolved. So obviously we've got a party to look forward to next week. You know, as we saw in the previews, we still haven't seen Delta. So I'm hoping that Delta, the Delta thing happens in the next season. But, you know, how do Gavin and Simon end up resolving their differences?
Yeah, and I really thought that we might have finished this episode with a bit more of a cutback to Simon maybe trying to negotiate this deal for $14 million when the asking price is 18 to 20. I think that's quite an interesting story to see how he's going to, if he can put that together, how he does that. And I thought we might have seen that phone conversation at least sort of ending halfway through, which would lead us into the next episode to see how that all ended up. But, yeah, I don't know. I think the producers might have missed a bit of an opportunity for a cliffhanger here.
Yeah, and the other thing that we've got to look forward to in I guess, wrapping up season two is what's happening over at the birdhouse with Monica.
Yeah, correct, because that is an interesting storyline.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I'm keen to know whether she was able to deliver on her promise to those guys, because there's been some big promises made this whole, you know, this whole thing. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, same. And same with the co-listing at the Grand Sky Penthouse. I think that's another bit of an unresolved issue. It was very briefly touched on in this episode, and obviously we've had a lot of coverage of it earlier in the season with the party itself, the co-listing party itself. But it would be interesting to see now that Gav's sort of given the green light to Kai to pursue it as a co-listing opportunity, how that all finishes up as well.
Yeah, who will receive a rose?
Who will receive a rose?
Yeah, who will receive Monica's rose?
Yes,
correct. So, well, Dave, we are done, done, done again with episode 5. So thank you once again for joining me for our Deluxe Nuts recaps. And we'll be back again next week with the season finale.
Beautiful. Looking forward to wrapping it up.
Amazing. See you then.
Thanks, Sam.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast. Don't forget to get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast. Visit joineliteagent.com.